Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. I'm delighted to have on the podcast with me this week, Mark Buchanan. Boy, we go way back. Not like we talk every day, but we talk every few years on the podcast or in my old life in radio. So I'm delighted to have Mark Buchanan back with me on Faith Conversations. He is a professor for many years, a pastor, but has been a professor for about 7 years now. He's an award-winning author, lives in Cochrane, Alberta, Canada, and has written a couple of favorite books of mine. The Rest of God and Spiritual Rhythm are a couple of those titles. We're going to talk today about God Walk, and I love the subtitle. Well, is it Walking as a Spiritual Practice? The subtitle? Because you know what happens. This is what happens to people getting that are recording interviews. They send out a pre-release, and this stuff sometimes changes. So, first of all, welcome, Mark. Let's start there.
Thanks, Anita. I was saying to my wife last night that I think our relationship goes back to when I first started publishing about 20 years ago, and have always enjoyed having a interview with you. So I'm grateful.
Well, and now, thanks, I feel old. Yeah.
Anita, the book subtitle now is called We fiddled with so many things. Moving at the Speed of Your Soul.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, Moving at the Speed of Your Soul. Yeah, and just as you know in the publishing world, as you said a moment ago, you're always tweaking and fiddling and trying to kind of position the book and blah, blah, blah. So it does bear a different title than what was in the pre-copy, pre-release.
Well, and actually, before we get into talking about God Walk, I want to talk about a couple of other things. Number one, last time I talked to you, you were working on a novel. You were working on a book about David, the biblical character. Yeah. And I want to know whatever happened with that.
So in the end, I published it this past spring, so just a couple of months ago in March, and I was trying to tackle the whole story as a single book in one volume, and I broke it into three. So it'll be a trilogy. So book one released in March is called David Rise, and that part tracks goes all the way back to the book of Ruth, which is David's great-grandmother.
Okay.
And up to that book takes the story up to David's coronation or his crowning in the southern kingdom of Judah.
Okay.
And then the next book will pick it up from there and move through to his taking the throne in Israel. And then the third book will kind of be those last years where things aren't so good for David.
So you decided to self-publish. I'm assuming this is available on Amazon.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll post that a link to that in the show notes podcast. So for people that would like to get a copy of that. Next, again, before we move to God Walk, though, this will certainly touch on and be touched on in your book, God Walk, and that is what's happening currently in the world. And in the world of podcasting, people might listen to this podcast 6 months down the road, a year down the road.
Right.
Well, the reality is that this podcast that you're listening to released, I'll say it in past tense, right, on the 15th of June, 2020. That'll give you a time frame if you happen to be listening to this podcast, months later, so that you'll know what was going on in the world. Is we're about 2 weeks, 3 weeks removed from the death of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer. Protests erupted immediately. There was some violence, but then the continuation of peaceful protests that then moved around the globe, and Mark, you live in Canada. I'm wondering a couple of things. One, if what transpired here in Minnesota and kind of moved out from there has touched Canada, and your thoughts. I know you go way back as someone who cares very deeply about God's heart for justice.
Yeah. Thanks, Anita. Yes, it has come to Canada. It didn't take on the violent character that we saw in some of the U.S. Cities, but very much, there was a strong response in all parts of Canada, where I think that we've seen collectively that people have had enough of this tacit racism, this kind of the thing where we deny its existence, but it continues to be operative in our thinking, in our particularly it's preserved in our institutions, and that's where the word systemic comes, where it's not, nobody's being intentionally racist, nobody walks around with racist thoughts or feelings of racial superiority of their own kind of.
I won't say nobody. I won't say nobody.
Well, no. But
I hear you.
Yeah, I'm overstating. But in reality, these things have soaked into the very fabric of our institutions, and I see it particularly in Canada. My wife and I were talking about this the other day with First Nations people or Native Americans. And Canadians love to think that we are free of bigotry and racism, but just actually put an average Canadian beside a First Nations person, and all of those same kind of those little behaviors, those micro behaviors, all start to emerge. So I think at some points there's these huge reorderings of society that happen, and unfortunately they often come with violence. I was actually thinking about the people going free from Egypt, and it would be nice if Pharaoh had just sort of said, you know what, it's good, you guys go, and he kept backing away, and finally it becomes violent, and it's tragic when it reaches that, and it's heartrending. But there's a sense where sometimes this dislocations and these realignments in history, they shake things up pretty bad.
Yeah. I watched I think the last 4 minutes of a John Oliver show online. I think he might be on HBO, which we don't get, but I found it online, and there's a significant amount of profanity, but he, and then he had a video clip of an African-American woman who spoke to that violence piece, and it was powerful, eye-opening, and I'm really glad, actually, that you just spoke to that. And
is that the one where she talks about a game of Monopoly?
No, it's not.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Where she talks about violence against our own community. We don't own anything. What do you mean?
Okay, right.
We own. I mean, it actually gives me chills thinking about it. And it just.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
it was like one more kind of slap in my face in a good sense of waking up to that. And anyway, so I appreciate you. I hadn't thought about the biblical component of leaving Egypt and the violence that ensued there.
It's a helpful framework in terms of thinking about it theologically.
Yeah, thank you. And I want that. I am a deep feeler, and so feelings, even though I can struggle getting in touch with my own, I can feel the world's feelings, and that's where I go first. But my upbringing, and of which much of it I'm deeply grateful for, that evangelical background, I still want to have a theological grounding.
Yeah.
And so I will go from the feeling place. I don't start at the theological grounding, but I move my way that direction.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just, it's big. It's,
And I, Cheryl and I, my wife, are praying all the time for wisdom for those, especially who are navigating this space. I mean, most of us are watching it and feeling it and but are not really, except at the level of our sort of own community, able to respond. And so I pray for wisdom for myself in responding, but I think that to be a leader in a community or in a state or a province or a nation at this time, that there is a deep need for the people of God to be on their knees asking for those leaders to be saturated with divine wisdom.
Amen to that, for sure. That sparked a thought and it just went out of my brain, so maybe it will come. Oh yeah, I know. Last week's podcast was centered around what's happening in our country and in the world, in the United States and in the world. And whether you listen to it or not, you might want to go to the show notes because I have a lengthy list of wonderful resources that you might want to pick up a copy and or chip your way through that list. Yeah. A lot on race and reconciliation. So wanted to mention that. And then the next couple of weeks, I will also focus this direction as well. I'll be talking with Daniel Hill, author of White Awake and Soon Coming White Lies, and May Elise Cannon as well, and hopefully Brenda Salter McNeil, and hopefully,
oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, hopefully
her stuff on reconciliation is amazing.
It's excellent. So yeah, and I've never had her on the podcast, so I think that's going to happen, and I'm hoping for Jamar Tisby as well. Wrote The Color of Compromise.
Whew, very good.
One of your fellow authors at Zondervan. He is actually.
You know, I'd also recommend, last time you and I spoke, it was MLK Day, and we talked about race and justice. I read pretty much annually Letter from Birmingham Prison by MLK, and I think it could not be a more timely word right now. Partly he, as you know, his MO was not to resort to violence, but not to capitulate either to it, and that is such a powerful prophetic statement about that is really directed against all the voices of moderation that say just wait, it'll come in time. And he's like, we have been waiting
and
for
now
hundreds of years,
and look at the time frame. That was written in the 60s, and here we are, 2020. Talk about waiting, right?
Yeah, it is so. I would recommend, and you can pull up a PDF.
Yeah, I'll post a link to
that
as well. That's
very
good. Good word. Okay. Well, let us launch at this point. I just felt it was really important to talk about that, and I was grateful that you were my guest because I know you have long worked in the area of justice in Canada and very interested in First Nations, and the church where you formerly pastored had relationships. You're in a totally different part of Canada today than you were back then. But thank you for speaking to this issue.
You're welcome.
Issue.
Yeah, actually, our church now is a First Nations church. Oh. We go to an Indigenous church.
What does that mean and look like?
Well, we drive 40 minutes to church. Well, I mean, when we can go to church, we've been online like everybody else.
Right, true.
In the last few months. But 40 minutes to we call them reserves in Canada, similar to reservation. Large, beautiful reserve south of us is called Soutina, and it's a tiny little church. It's been in existence for the building 112 years. And these beautiful, beautiful people. We started about 6 people. Now it's about 30. And faithful, faithful people who love the Lord and really have not, in the last number of years, because there's so much disruption in their own community, have really not thought of themselves as the people of God. They just simply come to church. And so we're working. I have a colleague who's an incredible minister of the gospel, and so we support her. We call her our priest.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And they love her to death. She's Indian Guyanese, so she's sort of brings her own racial mix to the thing. And she's a dynamite preacher. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And so we drive down there, and we fellowship, worship, hear the word preached and read. And so it's an incredible community. In fact, yesterday I wasn't able to go, but my wife and our friend were doing a funeral for a young man who died tragically. So very embedded in actually two Native communities here.
Oh, I love hearing that. Oh, that was just like balm for my soul. That kind of makes me emotional. So I'm glad to hear that, and encouraged to hear that. And you know what? Hear that word that Mark just said. What might that mean for you where you live? I don't know. But listen to the nudge of the Holy Spirit if you sense
Amen.
One. Yeah. Okay. God walk. Moving at the speed of your soul. And I've been a walker from way back. Love to walk. Got a hip replaced a year ago, December, this past December. And can walk better once again. But why walking? I mean, where did this come from in your own life and heart? Why did you want to write about this?
Yeah, I mean, this book, you know, I it's actually been written for a year and a half. It's just about to come out. So it's all pre-COVID. I didn't know such a thing as COVID. Nobody did except scientists.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it seems that in the last few months, as we're doing this show again, listeners may be listening to it later, but it was the one exercise that, you know, the world was suddenly available to them to walk. They couldn't go to gyms and all other things. But I became interested in walking because I was struggling with the idea that virtually every religious tradition has a corresponding physical discipline. So, classically, Hinduism has yoga. Many think yoga predates Hinduism, but it got linked together. And we can look at most spiritual traditions having that physical corresponding kind of physiology.
Tai Chi, karate,
yeah,
kung
all
fu,
that.
All that.
Gurkha.
Ah,
okay. And I thought, here we have Christianity, which is by definition incarnational. It's in the body. It worships a God who becomes flesh and walks among us, and we don't have the corresponding physical discipline. And then I realized, oh my goodness, we do. We've always had it. It's called walking. And when you start to read all the texts in Scripture about walk this way, walk that way, Jonah, you know, Noah walked with God, Enoch walked with God. What does the Lord require of you to walk humbly with your God? And, you know, Paul, walk in the light, walk in truth, etc. I suddenly realized these are not just metaphorical descriptions. These are actually the way the people who wrote those things worked out their identity and their faith. They actually walked them out literally. And then, of course, we worship one who, that's how he got around.
Well, and you talk about, like, about what speed did Jesus walk around?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not exactly, he wasn't power walking. Doubtful.
It wasn't power walking. And, you know, it wasn't like there's a lot of other modes of transport open. But what we begin to get as we read the gospel accounts and Jesus walking here, walking there, is he always seemed to, this is really evident in Mark's gospel, which I spend a lot of time on in the book. But if you do sort of pull up a map and trace Jesus, he goes from here to here, then over there, and it's like he takes out his GPS and he says, "What's the longest route to that next place?" You know, I could go directly there, or I could go way up over there and then circle. So it's sort of like he's choosing the lengthiest journey to where he needs to go next. And so why is that?
Did he
lack a sense of geography?
And I'm sitting here going, okay, I think he's choosing extra time to recharge. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think all of that. I think I think a lot of the formation, the discipline of those men he called to follow him happens on the way, and that, as we know, they resemble us over much in terms of their did you get what he said? I didn't get what he said. What's he talking about? And
yes.
He says something and we're all nodding sagely, you know, I agree with that. And the next thing we're blowing, you know, we're getting wanting raging at the Samaritans or something. And so there's a sense where, man, this is going to take a lot of time. And we're going to go for an extra long walk today to sort out some issues among us. You know, it's interesting that big kerfuffle that happens about who's the greatest in the kingdom of God. That's on the way. That's an on-the-way conversation.
Okay.
So I think that happened a lot.
And the thing also, as I was reading your book, that seemed to be evident is that he just wasn't in a hurry ever.
No.
And I feel like we're just pretty much in a constant state of hurry. Even those of us who know and talk about spiritual formation and spiritual practices, it's still, you know, oh, how fast can this length of silence go by? You know, I mean, it's we still have that hurry in us.
In one of my books, I don't remember which one, Anita, I talk about the distinction between effectiveness and efficiency. And I'm addicted to efficiency. So what's the quickest, cheapest way we can get this sucker done?
What's your Enneagram number?
I'm an 8.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
wow.
I'm really redeemed, right? I'm really.
you must be.
I'm always saying to my wife, she says, "You're such an 8," and I says, "No, I'm so redeemed." Like
that's great.
I just really want to get the thing done efficiently. You know, the shortest distance from here to there. And Jesus and the Lord are really about effectiveness, which is, does this actually bear fruit? Does this change? Is this transformation? Is this the inner architecture of your soul being reordered in order that the long-term consequences of that are a different way of living? And I think the efficiency, this addiction to efficiency, has actually undercut our commitment to effectiveness. You know, coming back to the conversation at the beginning of the podcast around what's going on globally with sort of protests about racism and some pushback on that, what we're actually asking for is a deep change in the heart of all of us that produces a different kind of society. And what we're always looking for is a quick fix.
Right. Isn't that the truth?
Can we tweet about this?
There's no such thing as a quick fix here.
Yeah, so I think it takes time, and I do think that Jesus made the most of the fact that he had an itinerant ministry. He's moving all over the place. He doesn't have other modes of transportation, so even if he could rent a donkey or something, he can't do that for his gang.
Right.
So they're going to walk. And rather than say this is a unfortunate necessity, this is just a byproduct of the life we live and the times we live, I think Jesus was very wise about stewarding these moments where, well, I would just say to listeners, think about how you've worked out most of your deep issues in your life. And a lot of listeners will say, I had to go for a walk.
Yeah.
I was sitting there stewing on it, stumping about it. We're having conversations that were just getting more and more tense and angry, and then I went for a walk and it came to me.
I'm a big bird watcher, and I've come to love the new birds that I've gotten to know here in on the Gulf Coast of Florida. And what happens as I bird watch is I walk, and you know, you can go many, many paces between seeing birds. You might hear them, but there's a lot of time to think and look and ponder and appreciate and just, right, converse with God. I mean, out in creation also, there's that element of walking that comes into play. But time to think and ponder, even if I wasn't in a space of I need to go for a walk and sort things out, it's a place where it can naturally happen. And before you even realize it, you're in dialogue with God, I think.
Absolutely. Like, I do think that there's something, and coming back to what I said earlier, Anita, is there a spirit or a physical discipline corresponding to the Christian faith, the incarnational faith, the God among us, God taking on flesh? And I think it's walking. And so when I began to research for this book, any book I write to discover, not because I'm an expert.
Yeah.
And so I have every book I've written, I've got about 30, 35 pages in me where I actually know stuff. And then I run out. And so then I either say, I'm not that interested, and I abandon the project, or I start researching. So that's what I did with this. I had about 35 pages where I actually knew stuff, and then another 200 and something where I had to research it. But I was stunned as I did the research, and I researched widely in terms of history of walking, the physiology of walking, the physical benefits, emotional benefits, et cetera, of walking. And what I found is that it is probably the one of the best ways to integrate your entire kind of spirit, soul, and body. Mm. Things are going on in us, around us when we walk, that there's hardly anything else that can replicate it. Mm. In fact, I quote in the book a Harvard doctor who says that if we could invent a pill that you took once a day and it would lower depression, lower cholesterol, prolong life, keep your weight down, and all these benefits, keep you more emotionally balanced, etc. This long list. She said if we could invent a pill, it would fly off the shelves, but we have it. It's called walking, and nobody seems to want it.
Wow. That's amazing.
Totally.
That's amazing. I got to find that.
I found out, and there's something been known by First Nations communities for centuries and practiced. There's a whole kind of practice around it in Japan, where walking in the woods is more than just a lovely experience. There's actually healing properties in the fragrance of trees that are doing great, great benefit to our immunity system.
So when I moved to Florida, my husband and I made this big move from Chicago. I would tell friends in texts and emails that my healing, emotional, spiritual healing, a piece of that absolutely was the sunshine. Well, where do you get the sunshine? Outside walking, doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I firmly believe that was a piece of that for me.
Yeah. Even, if you can walk, to walk on, go off trail, trail. So, onto a forest trail or something, the unevenness of ground is doing things for and in your body that simply walking on pavement can't do. So it's calibration, it's musculature, it's strengthening of bones, all of these things. And the beautiful thing is you don't have to think about it. If you're doing a workout, you're thinking, okay, now I'm going to do these reps, and here's the posture technique for it.
Or you're thinking, when is this over?
Yeah. Whereas a walk is just – by its very nature is doing all these things, and you're not thinking, oh, I need to work out that part of my, that muscle group in my legs. Just go for a walk in the woods. It'll happen.
Wow. I love that. So when I think of Christianity and walking, my mind immediately goes to pilgrimage, because I've always wanted to walk the Camino, or
of course,
or a portion of it, or whatever, or the Appalachian Trail, or, that's not, we don't always think about that one as spiritual, though. I think those things inherently happen when you're out on a long kind of pilgrimage. But I've watched movies on the Camino, and my husband and I watched one just this past week, which I'd never seen before, just a short little documentary, or I guess you'd call it that. But this woman decided to walk the Camino so she could forgive. Like, she had a real specific purpose in mind.
Yeah.
Talk about that pilgrimage thing.
A whole chapter in the book on the history of walking, including pilgrimages. And when I first set out to write the book, I thought, maybe I can talk the publisher into giving me a big chunk of money and I'll do the Camino on their ticket. And then I'll, write up a book. And then I thought, actually what I'm interested in is ordinary walking, daily walking, walking to the post box and getting the mail. So I do touch on that. But here's again, part of the research, what I discovered is that there's been this weird trajectory historically around walking. And long walks, when they weren't necessitated by I have to now sort of immigrate over to that part of the world, when they were undertaken deliberately they were pilgrimages, and the purpose of a pilgrimage, often penitential, I needed to forgive, I needed to be forgiven, but often aimed at some sort of inner transformation. I needed to work things out between myself and my God and maybe people in my life. And over the course of history, that shifted, and now we have, hence what we're in the current moment of, things like marches. And here's the thing that I discovered in my research, is that if you don't retain a sense of pilgrimage in the long walk, then you're trying to change the world but remain unchanged yourself.
Ooh.
Leo Tolstoy said the delusion of humankind is that they want to change the world, but no one wants to change themselves. And I think I would just simply advocate. I've been involved in marches for justice and whatnot. I actually helped establish a march in the town I used to live in called the Walk of the Nations, and it was a demonstration of solidarity of all the people in the community. So I'm all for that, but I think if we don't retain a sense of, every march should be also a pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. So I am marching not just to simply say I'm against this or for this, trying to change the world in some way, but realizing I needed every step. Personal change.
Yeah, which really does point you toward the slow, regular walks where there's that process of transformation that continues to happen.
And communion. Walking is communion. It's something I explore in the book, is a sense of how do I meet God? Where do I meet God? Well, obviously, you don't want to confine it to any one thing. You want to be dwelling as much as you can consciously in the presence of God. But I do think that there's unique opportunities when we're afoot to commune with God and God's creation. You talked about living in Florida in the sunshine. There's something about meeting God through that which he has wrought and made. I think there's something about seeing our neighbors as we walk our neighborhood, and I try to do that every day, and seeing our neighbors in their neighborhood. So I, not when I whiz by in my car, but I actually, in this age of COVID, and again, listeners, months from now, this may all be past history, but so we're not pausing and chatting as much as we used to, but that is a regular part of my walking, is often meeting the new neighbor or the neighbor, over in the next block that I've never talked with before. I have a guy down the road, and we both talk motorcycles every time we see each other.
And you kind of hope, I think there are many that are even as we struggle against the restraints of, coronavirus, the hope that some of the changes that had to come might be some changes that we will sustain. I think there's also that hope. I've seen people walking with friends, even distanced, on each side of the street as they're walking through the neighborhood, having even extended conversations, not just at the end of a driveway or whatever, as you pass by. That happening as well.
Yeah, no, I do think, and that whole changes, my wife and I never went out and wandered malls or anything like that. So in some ways, nothing's really changed for us.
Yeah.
But there's a sense where everybody's spending habits not everybody's, but many people's spending habits have altered drastically over this period of lockdowns. And I think a lot of people are saying, gosh, do I need to go out for food so much? Do I need to really go to do retail therapy as much as I was?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting what emerges on the other side of this.
Yeah. Well, I think some good questions have been posed that I hope people will sit with and really think through and not just race back into life as it once was. You know, you break the book up into three sections. You know, mile one, setting out, mile two, making tracks, mile three, pressing on. And we've talked a lot, I think, about setting out, and you've been talking in this section of making tracks. I would love for you to grab anything you want that really you want to make sure gets talked about that I might not. And some of that probably is in pressing on. I did have a question about walking as remembering and what you're talking about with that.
Yeah, well, I've always been intrigued, and this has shown up in other of my writings and in my preaching, about the role memory plays in faith. And it's a nuanced thinking about memory and faith. You know, for instance, Paul talks about forgetting what is behind. And there seems to be a kind of amnesia God practices around our sinfulness. And Jesus never really seems that interested in people's past. So, you know, what did you do? And are you qualified to follow me? And yet at the same time, there's this holy sacred memory, this remembering of things, ways God has met us, things he's brought us from. This is woven into the faith story as well. And so I realized that a lot of my walking was a practicing of, attempt to practice that holy memory. Sometimes I lapse into the memory where I get stuck in my past, full of deep regrets, old resentments resurge. But I think those two become opportunities to now practice the grace of God in the midst of this thing that I thought I had dealt with, and there it is again. And so I think that memory, it seems to me, for at least in my experience, tied to walking, that often I'll go for a walk and I think, I'm just going to, it's a beautiful day, I'm going to enjoy the day, and something will come tumbling at me, something from my childhood, something from recently I was in a conflict with somebody that I didn't think got resolved as well as it should have. And I'm revisiting again, and I'm having those conversations in my head where I'm brilliant and they are withering beneath my brilliance, my scorn of my brilliance. And by the time, you know, so like, a mile into that, I'm suddenly all vexed up. And I'm realizing, actually, I got taken out by memory.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And so how do I now navigate that in terms of the ready grace of God, the presence? So I explore that terrain, and it does strike me again that it's not like I'm not going to have those memories sitting in my chair or driving in my car, but for some reason I am more kind of susceptible to them in walking. So, but I do think that then presents us this opportunity to kind of rethink and reframe. And so that whole concept of reframing is crucial as well. That thing that, how do I think of this now in light of how God's met me, how God's done some healing work?
I also think about it in terms of walking can keep me, not always, but sometimes a little bit more in the present. So I am future oriented all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I need and want that look back to say, God did this here. God can do this here. The present for me is this little sliver of a thing that I race through to get to the future. And I have to pay attention to today and sometimes work at looking back to see the good things that God has accomplished. So I think it's interesting, our personal orientations and the part memory can play. That's really interesting.
Yep, very interesting. I spend a lot of time in that chapter talking about particularly the Exodus event, which is the primary event of Israel, the memory that keeps alive, that they keep alive and keeps them alive.
Yeah.
And so it's a primary example. That, and of course, what then is taken up in the New Testament around the Exodus event, the Passover, that Jesus memorializes with the cup and the bread and says, every time you do this, remember it. So this continually bringing the past into the present in anticipation and in preparedness for the future. So that's the kind of the key events around sacred memory. Yeah. And I think we can do that with anything. I think that we can, when we're being sabotaged, and Israel often practiced, or the church has always practiced, that sacred memory in the midst of, in the face of really terrible things that, you know, that could become horrific, nightmarish memory. And they began to reclaim this way God has been in their midst and make it living again.
That's great. I love that. Reclaim the way God has been in their midst. Yeah.
You have a guest coming on, and I think you said next week, Brenda Salter McNeil. And I think I got from her, she's done great work on reconciliation. I can't remember if it's from her or someone also writing reconciliation, but the concept of re-storying. Mm-hmm. So restore, but to rethink the story in light of the present reality. So that's partly what I'm about.
I like the great concept. Love that. So mile 3 in the book is all about pressing on. What do we need to know about pressing on?
Well, I mean, in any journey, you know, I love the Isaiah 40 passage, those who trust in the Lord, they will soar up on wings of eagles, they will run and not, they will not grow weary, and they will walk and not faint. And, you know, scholars who study that say that the normal kind of conventions of Hebrew poetry is you move from the lesser to the greater. So we would expect the order of those images to be reversed. We would expect that it sounds cooler to soar on a wing on the eagle than to walk and not faint, so that we'd build toward that. And so scholars have said, actually, it is moving in that thing from the lesser to the great, that soaring on wings of eagles, we have all had those moments. You just got the news, you got admitted to Yale on a full ride or something. or where we've just had lots of energy, you know, we're in our youth and in our prime and we're startup business and things are going well, so we're running and not growing weary. The real challenge of life is to walk and not faint. When you just slog on and things have not, you know, you're in that marriage, you're in that part of your business, you're in that season of your life, you're with that health issue, and it's just an act of heroism to get up. And there's a sense where the provisions of God are for all those things, but aren't they amazing when he's there every day when life is less than ideal? And so there's a sense where walking really kicks in, is where your legs start to ache, and it just starts to get wearisome and tedious, and the landscape's no longer interesting.
Yeah,
and the wind's in your face, and it's a
and you're thinking, as I'm thinking, how far is the walk back home, right?
Is it too late to turn back? And so I think using walking then, and I use it. You know, I mostly talk about the actual physical act of walking, but I'm also thinking about it in this larger metaphorical sense of life is this journey, and there is a moving towards something, but there's always those moments where it becomes very, very tedious or hard. Okay. And so one of my favorite chapters in that section is actually called Walking as Exorcism. It's a strange chapter. It's probably my favorite, because it's dealing with that middle ground where Jesus seems to entrust to us the confronting of and the dealing with some of those things in us that this kind only comes out by prayer. And the key example is when he turns to Peter and says, "Get behind me, Satan." And he's not saying, "I'm going to cast out whatever in you that's making you say stupid things." He's saying, "Go deal with yourself." He says it again to Peter, where he says, on the night Jesus betrayed, he says to Peter, "Satan wants to sift you like wheat." And I'm praying that you stand, not that I'm going to somehow release you or liberate you from this assault. And so there seems to be this middle ground in Scripture where something in us is reaching almost diabolical proportions. Like this anger I have, this fear I have, this hatred I have, this resentment I have, it goes down so deep that it's not simply this little passing moment where I had this little sort of outburst of emotion, but this is some part of the architecture of who I am. And but we're not exactly going to go to the exorcist. We're not exactly saying I need, you know, some kind of spiritual deliverance here. What do we do with that? And so I explore this thing where we're continually dealing with these things in our humanity that aren't simply human condition. Human condition is I'm afraid. Human condition is I'm angry. This is stuff where, no, I'm locked in cycles and patterns and strongholds of anger and fear and et cetera. And I make the argument that one of the gifts to walk in is to actually surrender those things continually to God. There may be long and maybe even lifelong struggles, but we're literally and figuratively walking those things out. I know so many men who are struggle with sexual addiction. As a pastor, I helped a lot of men walk, and I use the term intentionally, walked with them in it. Yeah. And it is a walk. It's not like magically that thing goes away. Sometimes it does, but it's a rare thing.
Yep.
It's a rare thing with any substance addiction or any kind of psychological addiction. It just goes away. You walk it out. My First Nations friends often say, when you're wrestling with something, they would say, well, you need to walk with that.
Yeah, what a great term. I think we would be remiss to not talk about this before we end our conversation. In fact, you start out talking with a story, talking about a man that you know who cannot walk. And I think about people listening to this conversation who cannot walk. Maybe they've got bad knees. Maybe they are in a wheelchair, whatever the case. But you write a chapter for those who can't walk. What do you say to those people?
Yeah. Well, the book actually begins, maybe I'll read a brief portion of this.
Please.
The book begins this way. My friend Norm can't walk. He once could, with poise, with strength. He wasn't Buster Keaton, but he strode the earth with vigor and ease and effortless balance. But in as much time as it takes you to read this sentence, he stopped walking. Not by choice. He lost the use of both legs and most of the use of both arms when his horse, his trusted horse, threw him sideways and gravity pulled him earthward and he hit the ground at an angle that broke things inside him. In a blink, he went from agility to paralysis, from mobility to confinement, from standing most days to sitting all of them. One moment his legs went wherever he told them, the next they refused. And so I go on a little bit more. Norm is a good friend and gave me permission to use this. In the story, in the chapter near the end on those who can't walk, I tell the fuller story of Norm.
Okay.
And I've learned so much from Norm and many other friends who are differently abled about the power of transformation. Norm and his wife, Pauline, had to make very deliberate choices about not descending into depression, bitterness.
Sure.
They openly have talked about, so I'm not, you know, tattling, the strain that this was on their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So their marriage was in jeopardy. The work that he had done all his life and loved, now he can't do it. Mm-hmm. He couldn't do it anymore. The life they'd lived, et cetera, et cetera. So they, Norm and his wife, had to make very, very deliberate choices about what are we going to do with the rest of our lives. I have rarely met a man more kind, more generous, sweeter. And one of the things he realized is the time that he never had before, he had now. And he began to invest in people that honestly I didn't have time for. There were people in the church that I was impatient with, that I'd had enough of. In fact, when I talked to Norm recently around getting his permission and reading him portions of this book, he said, oh, that person that you talk about in the book, but you veil who they are, I got to tell you how they're doing. And it's just and it's a long investment.
Wow.
And so what I come to is that at the end, really what I'm advocating for is a transformation that can happen through walking. Well, that can happen through other ways too. It's just that most of us who can walk are sitting around not working at that transformation.
Well, I'm a spiritual director, and I have a bunch of clients, and I often will say I love walking with these women through whatever they are. And what do? We sit in our chairs, and every one of them is through video. I actually don't have any local clients. But we're sitting in our chairs looking at each other on the screen, but I call it walking with them. You know, that's how I think of it. So to your point.
Because you're working on that deliberate transformation.
Yeah, I totally get
it. But all of us who are abled and can walk, it's you can spend a whole lifetime where you know you need to change something in, how would I describe, the architecture of your soul.
Yeah.
And you don't do it.
Mm.
And Norm did it.
Wow.
And he did it sitting still.
What a beautiful way to wrap up this conversation. I mean, that's powerful. That's powerful.
Thank you.
Mark Buchanan, I always love conversing with you. Lots. You have so much to teach and say, and you do it so beautifully in your speaking and in your writing. And I'm delighted that we have another book that we can pay attention to, read through, sit with for a period of time. God Walk, Moving at the Speed of Your Soul. Just wonderful to have you on the podcast again. Thank you.
Anita, always a pleasure. Thank you.
And to everyone else, I say keep the conversation going.